Welcome to Going Interior, a podcast about doing hard jobs and living well. I'm your host, Jamie Cavanaugh, Captain Paramedic with the Grand Junction Fire Department and Peer Support Team Coordinator. Today I'm joined by Matt Schofield. He's a firefighter paramedic here in Grand Junction Fire, also peer support team member, shift chaplain, husband, father of two, soon to be three, I hear.
Yep.
Congratulations. That's awesome. You owned your own production company.
Yep.
And just bring an amazingly positive attitude to work every day. So really excited to chat with you.
Yeah. I'm glad to be here, man. Love talking to you.
You have a super interesting upbringing. Interesting to me. You sent me your whole bio, but I kind of wanted to let you introduce it a little bit. What brought you to become a firefighter? What was your childhood experience, and what brought you to that point?
Yeah, I was born in Littleton, but raised here on the Western Slope. I was homeschooled, which was awesome in a lot of ways, and then weird in a lot of ways. I mean, it was really cool. My parents like really loved being parents and like invested in us a lot. We live right in front of the monument, so we're always hiking and outside. Did sports nice. But I kind of got to around high school and I wanted to be around girls and, you know, like play baseball. And so
sure.
I ended up going to Fruita High School full time.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that was just a culture shock. Like,
yeah.
It was just like, I remember getting lost on my way to class for the first time. And, homeschooling, it was just me and my brother and we were super close, but it was a culture shock being around like 300-400 kids.
Absolutely.
You know, and just trying to figure out, like, it was probably how kids feel like moving to a new school, you know, like, where do I fit in? What's my friend group? And just those angsty like teen years. I was pretty introverted and quiet and like didn't want to say the wrong thing or show that I was a weird homeschool. I had a bowl cut. I didn't want to like make myself any more strange than I already was. So I got into journalism. I was like the editor of the high school newspaper.
Okay.
And which is super fun. So I kind of finished up at Fruita Monument, and during that time also I met my only wife. We both went to Colorado Mesa University here in Junction together after Fruita, and we got married the summer after our freshman year. We were 20.
Wow. Wow.
It's crazy. I look back at that. I was 19 when I proposed.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. But we went to CMU, and I thought I wanted to do journalism, signed up for those classes, and I was working at Home Depot at the time. Yeah, I was working in the tool department, stocking, and I was working with this guy named Cody. If you're out there, Cody, you know, shout out to you. He was, he had been on a hotshot crew up in Oregon.
Okay.
So I remember, and I really looked up to him a lot, and he's like, you know, a cool dude. I thought he was super cool, had cool stories about that time. And so I remember I went home after one day at Home Depot and I Googled, like, super millennial way to get into the fire. I Googled, like, how to become a firefighter. And it was like, well, like, get your EMT and do some ride-alongs. So I remember calling John Williams, and he scheduled me for a ride-along. And I went down to Station 3. It was a truck 3 at that time. Such a cool crew.
Mm-hmm.
And they just were super, super welcoming and like put the stick up and we climbed the stick. But it was just it reminded me of baseball. It reminded me of like just those, just that team atmosphere.
Yeah.
Where people, there's roles and people rely on each other. And it was physical and I just loved it.
You talked about being this really kind of shy, reserved kid. You were homeschooled, that sort of thing. This is a big leap. You're on a podcast now. You're a firefighter paramedic who honestly is in charge of many of the calls we go on. Even as a captain, the firefighter paramedic is often the one running the calls. What was that transformation like?
Growing up, my parents, we watched a lot of classic movies. They were always reading to us. Mm-hmm. Using language as a tool was instilled in us from a young age. My brother's the same way. We love to read and communication is a big deal to us. And so I think that going into that new environment, I kind of went into a shell and it kind of took some people to bring me out of that and to trust it, to get me to the point where I could be confident in being different. I think that, and it's kind of interesting now, you know, as a medic, you're sort of interviewing people. You need to be able to anticipate where people's headspace is going and communicate that. And so those years where, you know, my parents were reading to us, we were reading a lot growing up, it was kind of in a weird way getting into journalism. You know, I had a really good teacher who told me, like, everybody has a story to tell. I wrote a little bit for local newspapers, and then doing video production, the style that we would do is documentary style. So just asking questions. And I think that that helps in that paramedic role where you have to anticipate where people are going, anticipate the story. So they end up complementing each other in a weird way.
It's interesting to hear you say that, and only knowing you since you've gotten on the fire department, like, I'm sitting across from, like, an all-American looking guy, you know, strong, well-spoken, you know, all these things where you say, and I think it rings, and maybe that makes it ring true, maybe more so for people who do struggle with those, you know, esteem issues or whatever it may be, that this is not, you're not in a silo. This may be something that someone else has experienced.
I hope that all the people, if I've FTO'd you or, you know, you've been in that role, hopefully this is true, but I think that we need to be better in the fire service about being patient and trying to look for strengths that people have and draw those out, like people did for me coming into school and just being, because coming into the fire service, it is sort of that environment for people, especially if they've never been in a frat house type of, you know, setup, been in a locker room or, you know.
Can be intimidating.
It can be intimidating socially. And so just trying to find, like, okay, well, we might not all look like this person or act like this stereotype of a firefighter, but the reality is, like, we need different personality types to kind of round us out and make us a more whole organization. So hopefully as we grow at Grand Junction, we can seek out the strengths and pull those out of people, you know, like people did for me.
Yeah, that's great. Get the best out of each individual team member, but we get that much stronger when we invest in and grow that person and allow them to, you know, truly to flourish, even if they're not fitting into this mold, whatever our conception of this is the idyllic firefighter, just, you know, eats steel for breakfast, bench presses 325 pounds 10 times. That's not everybody.
Right.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things I loved from my very first ride along. I could see the different roles complementing each other. We need each other to be better.
You talked about something else, too, that I thought was an interesting point, especially for a paramedic or a care provider of any type, eliciting that story. And does that bleed over into your patients? Because I think a lot of people right now would say, why would you go to paramedic school? You know, that's like a four-letter word somehow. You're going to take on all this additional responsibility. Did that weigh into your decision to do that and then your job satisfaction of being a paramedic, you think?
Learning about people. I get a joy out of that. So, you know, my ambulance day, I'm excited to be in those different environments. There's a story behind all those people. And same thing on our calls. You just don't know where you're going to be. And it's people are really interesting.
And you are now part of the peer support team and a shift chaplain. Do those abilities kind of complement those roles as well?
And I can't remember exactly when this happened, but I went through a process of, like, writing a personal mission statement.
Okay.
And it's probably around the time I became dad the first time, just trying to get my crap together and try to figure out what am I doing here, where am I leading my family. The thing that kept coming to my mind so far in my life that has brought me a lot of joy is, like, seeing people grow and develop. I've gotten the chance to do that. You get the chance daily to do that at the fire department, whether you're on a call with a patient or FTOing somebody at academy. Peer support is such a cool way. I mean, just to be able to walk through things with people and see them come out the other side. I think as a chaplain, that's something that we're still developing. I think when I've approached, like, ministry in the past, my wife and I were involved in campus ministry in college.
Okay.
You know, going through that, we loved seeing people grow and develop in their faith. We've been married coming on 10 years, and that's been a consistent thing in our house. It's like our dinner table is a place where we try to consistently have people over that are, have different views. We want to be a place where people can have kind of raw conversations and grow and develop that way. Whether it's running calls or peer support and the chaplain stuff is just kind of like a natural extension of that for me.
Do you ever find resistance to that sort of thing, to going to those levels?
I'm new as a firefighter, mm-hmm. in my opinion, like 6 years in, and young as a person, sure. being 30. So I think that, like, in the firehouse, my approach has just been trying to be like more of a listener. Just, I think, peer support becoming more accepted, mental health becoming more accepted. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's because we're growing and stuff.
Quote that I thought of you this morning when I was looking through some materials from Ben Franklin, actually. So not overly religious, but just said, a good example is the best sermon. From what you just said, that's, you're living it.
I think it's easy to judge people who might not look cleaned up or put together, you know? And we got to look at that interval, like where people come from.
Absolutely.
Where are they at now?
You know? Absolutely. Some of the folks we run on the ambulance and mm-hmm. stuff like that come from these just circumstances that we can't even yeah. begin to fathom. Tell me about, you were talking about earlier on, you and Haley came to basically, was it back to religion in high school or college? Or was that kind of a first introduction for both of you?
For me, I was raised as a Christian. Like, my dad would get up, read the Bible to my brother and I, and it was sort of like the thing that we did. Mm-hmm. And for Haley, it wasn't really a part of her life at all. And so we became friends in high school. We started dating. I was like 14 and 15 and just sure. like, man, what do these people think and believe? Cause that's what I'm gonna merge my beliefs with that. Cause I just want to like blend in and not be, I don't want to stick out at all. Mm-hmm. People would tell me like, man, like you were homeschooled. Like, you're not weird. So that was kind of where I was at. And so faith was like on the back burner for mm-hmm. sure. And I remember at Fruta, there was this teacher, students were having like a Bible study in his room at lunchtime, like once a week. Sometimes he would like talk he could only do it if the students asked him to do it, like mm-hmm. legally, you know? Sure. So I remember just kind of like wandering in at lunch one time, and he was talking about Jesus's character and how Jesus, like, he was kind of demonstrated how like Jesus was a man of integrity mm. and defined like integrity meant being the same person in every room that you're in, mm. being the same person at school that you are in church on Sunday, with your parents that you are in class. I was like, that was not me. And it wasn't like I was wrapped up in like
that stuff.
Gnarly yeah. stuff, yeah. you know, street drugs. I wasn't doing, you know, but it was like in my heart, I knew like mm. that's not where I'm at. Mm. And it felt just kind of, you know, that feeling of just like dissonance, like is not right. And then in college, we became a part of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship,
okay.
which is a campus ministry. It was just basically InterVarsity's mission is every corner of every campus. Hmm. And so reaching, basically empowering like students to help like reach out to the corners of campus that are not getting reached. So the goal was like, let's not make this like a Christian club where exclusive and you have right. to be this clean to get in. That kind of exposed Haley and I to this, what felt a lot like what you read about in the Bible, that the early church of like, it was people doing life together, having community together, mm-hmm. and like asking questions and being able to be honest. Is the Bible true? How do we know it's true? Like, mm-hmm. what's the evidence here? And it was just like super refreshing. We would have people over to our house. We would have dinners. And it was super cool as a young couple. It gave us a lot of purpose together. And since that time, we've really loved doing that sort of thing. And I think that coming into the firehouse, I still feel that way. Every corner of the firehouse, there's needs that people have, whether it's mental health or spiritual needs, beyond just doing a good job as a firefighter, a good job as a medic, which is important in living on that mission. Like, how can we like help meet each other's needs? And I see that as a huge purpose of mine at
that's cool.
Junction.
That's cool. Yeah. And I love what you said. This isn't some exclusive, we're in this in-group, yeah. you're not in this in-group, and just knowing that we're all doing what we can in life. You have this principled approach and this religion that is really beneficial for you, and you're still providing that assistance to folks that may never be a thing for them. And that's,
for sure.
That's okay.
Yeah.
One book we were talking about earlier, well, a group of books is just like Stoic philosophy, also yeah. talking about that level of virtue, because that like you were saying, you felt that discord in yourself, right? And maybe somebody who doesn't read the Bible, that may not be the way it sinks in, or they have, and that just didn't work for them when it comes to that virtue component and just living a good life that helps you feel better inside.
What I had gotten backwards is that I felt like, I think I had gotten to this place as a young person that I felt like God was just another adult type of figure, another kind of a tough manager, like somebody who had these expectations and I wasn't meeting them. Life was under that was boring and difficult versus how I wanted to live. One of my favorite passages in the Bible is John 15. And it's this picture that Jesus talks about of like the vine and the branches. He is the vine and we're a branch off that vine. And when we're like connected to him, we can have fruit that comes out of us. I love that picture because what I found is God is not a hard manager. He's not, you know, I think when we respond to a lot of the things that Jesus says, there's actually a life there and an opportunity to like thrive.
I like to bring all these different fields together, and it struck me there's this quote that might be kind of seen from a military aspect, but that discipline leads to freedom or something like that.
Right.
It's a similar idea, but this is also, for you, this is something beyond, obviously beyond just these concepts and that sort of thing. It is this deeper connection, right?
For sure.
Tell me about the exciting parts of the job. Stressful, but exciting, first do fire, super sick call. Like you want to be, basically you're signing up to be in charge of these stressful scenes.
When I think of some of the calls that have had that, there's like that feel of a legit call where you're like, okay, this is, you know, your training needs to click in. I was thankful for Academy and for the reps that we got on cars in Academy and in training because you grabbed the spreaders. I was on Rescue 1 that day, or Truck 1, and got on Rescue 1. And we rolled up and there was a female patient pinned. And it was kind of a personal call for me because, you know, mom and kids, and they were driving in the same car that my wife drives. And just shopping, doing school, back to school shopping. But I was thankful for training because it was just one of those, we need to roll the dash. That's what we need to do. It's a task that needs to get done. There's no like emotions about it. It's just, and it's one of those things that's what you do in your practice for Auto X. So I just clicked in and it was super smooth. You know, the guys I was with did a great job and like time was of the essence. And so we were able to be really smooth. I felt that, you know, I think that clicks in on like your first do. I remember my first hot residential structure fire that, you know, pulled the line, forced the door, couldn't see anything. I just remember that feeling of your training clicks in. And I think that hole you rise, or you sink to the level you're training is an old adage, but it's 100% true. Like, and so I think that it's become important to me at the station level to try to continue to train and further that so that I'm not sinking
absolutely
very far, hopefully, absolutely, to that training level. But thankful for those reps.
That feeling that when everything goes right, it does feel really good to be able to provide those things. You're on the peer support team, chaplaincy now. I'm sure you've encountered folks that are struggling with some of the stuff we deal with. What resources do you turn them to?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a question that I have for myself sometimes. Like, gosh, what do I say? You know, being a dad has helped me sometimes with those conversations. I've had some conversations with people after calls or a lot of times going through personal stuff and trying to work while they're going through that and deal with both things. Kind of a cliche, but just listening. And it's super hard to just listen sometimes and feel like you're not bringing anything else of value. You know, it feels like I should be offering or I need to be doing something more active. But man, just like sitting with them and sitting in it. And in marriage, early on, somebody told me sometimes you don't need to fix the problem, you just need to listen. It's crazy how easy it is to slip into that mode of trying to solve the problem and fix people. And it's true in marriage, it's true with peer support and the people we work with. Man, sometimes what people need is just somebody to be there and to know they're not alone walking through that, even if you don't have the right answer and don't have a solution.
We as paramedics, firefighters, we are trained to fix stuff. That's what we do, right? And then to completely shift that role to being a listener to just supporting somebody. That can be our role on calls sometimes, though, too, right? There's only so much we can do sometimes.
For sure. On a call, you're trying to weed through information, what's important, what's not important, you know, with medical history, and you come home with the kids and with Haley, and that's not how you build a relationship.
Right.
You don't sort out like the key information and then just stop listening, you know, as much as like probably I'd still do that. And I think that there's a come down time from my shift where I need to like reset that a little bit myself. You can't build a relationship sorting facts out So I think realizing that in our job is a huge win. I think that's a first step in having better relationships outside of work, you know.
Nice. Tell me about your daily routine a little bit then. You're getting off, you work an ambulance off, and you work at busy stations. Tell me about what that feels like to go home. We'll start there. From going home tired, are there things throughout your day that help you show up in the way you want to show up? First for your family on 4-day. How do you do that?
I will try to like start the day either in prayer or reading, maybe journaling, like something that's set my focus above like the daily anxiety and trying to like get my brain off of that like crazy anxiety wheel of just like, what's the to-do list today?
Absolutely.
So I think that that's helpful. And ideally coming off shift that happens, kind of breaking that, okay, I'm done at shift. I'm done with needing to have that brain on. Maybe coming home, you know, I have about a 20-minute drive to my house in Fruita, so that's a really good break that I have to have because it's drive time. And then getting home, I've been listening to a really good parenting podcast by Dr. Meg Meeker. She was talking about on there how important it is when you first walk in the room, your kids look at your face and they look at you and they react to how you are approaching them.
Interesting.
And so I've been thinking about not just with kids, but like when I come into my house, what am I bringing in kind of as a vibe, as a, you know, whatever you want to call it, but, and they reflect that. And so I think just trying to be really intentional with that, coming home and then just engaging with them. I miss them. Like I miss my family, you know, somebody told me when Haley and I were dating, you should always run home. There's a lot of guys who struggle with not wanting to run home and they want to, you know, leave shift, and that's fine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with hobbies or anything like that. Those are all healthy and have a place, but a part of us should really want to be with our family and feel this kind of like angst at the end of 48 hours. Like, man, that was a long time. I need to get home. I just try to engage with the kids. I've really enjoyed it. In the morning, we do in the preschool years, we've done school together. Mm-hmm. So I'll like get out their little picture Bible and we'll start with that. We'll pray together for the day. And like, I'll do a pop quiz where I'm like, what's your name? What's mom's phone number? You know, just like they love it. It's a pop quiz. What's our address? And they think it's hilarious. And then just a little school, and that just kind of starts things off. And then I just try to do some kind of physical activity every day. That's really important too. Hit the gym, or got into mountain biking this summer, which is awesome. So just getting outside, I think, is a good reset for me too.
Awesome. But
the morning is really, I think that's when it goes well. That starts off the day in the right direction for me.
Nice. Nice. I think what you said about coming home to your family was super wise. And I see this potentially with guys who work a ton. We can potentially have this separation. We're gone for 2 whole days. If you turn that into 3 or 4 or 5 days, like, you're no longer connected with that core of your family. You're just an observer kind of along for the ride. And I've been there. So I do know that the more I come in and try to be, you know, part of the team, hang out with my daughter, you know, right away, reconnect, do those things, the more I want to be there. It's just like this perpetual cycle, you know, versus I wasn't there for a while. It's really hard. I don't really know what's going on. I'm kind of an impediment at home.
Yeah.
And I really need to decide before I get home, where am I going to be at and how do I reconnect?
That's a good point. Yeah. Turning into a cycle. And then you probably have less confidence as a dad. And so then you don't really want to be there as much, or don't want to try to engage because you don't know what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, it can be super challenging. You bring a positive attitude to work, it seems like. You maybe bring some of those same things. What's a work day look like for you? What are those intentional components that you try to line up to have your best day?
We say at our house, like, the tanks are full. Like, my hiking tank is full, or my, you know, love tank is full, whatever. But if those tanks are, like, full at home, I feel like I can, I'm, like, excited to go to work because I'm, like, I'm supported by my wife. My kids support it, so I'm not stealing from them, right. You know? So I think that I feel, like, just ready to go.
That's cool.
I think that's a huge part of it, and I think just showing up, I've been really thankful for great. We have some awesome people at Junction who work and do this job at a really high level, and so I've had good mentors and coworkers who have shown me a good routine and how to sustain, have a job, have this job and do this job in a sustainable way. Not a sprint, but not a lazy marathon.
Sure. You know?
I think showing up to work and kind of getting into that mindset of being systematic and being intentional, you know, doing the same thing kind of the same way every time, which is so important in this job. Getting my coffee, you know, checking the rig, doing it the same way every time. I was working with a guy a few years ago who made an important tweak to my morning routine.
Okay.
We were checking the rig together and he was like, "All right, let's go look at some people." We're done with that, but let's, like, as a part of my check, like, let me go engage, see where people are at, and check in with the guys. And I think there's some captains who I've noticed do a great job with that. Check the truck, they go and check on the guys, and I've seen guys be intentional about that to just incorporate it with your routine. I think it kind of tells yourself, I'm here for that rig and everything that rig does. Also, there's seven dudes here who I can also make an impact on and can impact my life. So
absolutely,
it's a huge factor that I think we overlook.
Very cool. Got this quote, Thomas Merton, "Happiness is not a matter of intensity, but of balance, order, rhythm, and harmony."
That's really good.
Sleep can be a challenging thing,
yeah,
especially on our schedules. You got another kid coming.
Yep.
You have two relatively young kids already. How do you balance that?
I think the hardest thing, because a lot of times, especially like getting into the job and being newer, I felt like, well, all right, sleep deprivation is what I signed up for, and that's part of the job, and which is probably a lot healthier view. I've gone through waves where I get frustrated, honestly, because people, you know, you're on a call for an earache at 3 a.m, especially if it's that second day of the 48, where I start to feel like you are robbing me of alertness with my family, you know?
Sure.
You start to take it personally. It's something I've had to pray about, and I still call by call need to kind of lay that down and get back to that point of just saying, this is, you know, this is the job. That's a can't control thing.
Absolutely.
You know? And so what can I do beneficial on this call? Can I be a listener? Can I be an example to the guy I'm next to and having a better attitude? So that's like on the calls. But I think between the calls, just, you know, some of the tough stuff we've talked about in peer support, just trying to do better with sleep hygiene. I read that Why We Sleep book, Matthew Walker. Yeah, and that's it's a really good book. I think it kind of added to my anxiety initially, you know. So I think it's good to know those things, but then control what we can control. There's a lot we can control. I need to do a better job at the screen time, you know, in bed, not watching YouTube, not training my brain that's a place where YouTube happens versus where that's where sleep happens. Caffeine abuse is like a big one in the fire service.
Absolutely.
Like, I think guys, they're like, I can crush a monster and go to bed, but what they don't realize is it's affecting the quality of sleep that they are getting, and then it's a cycle. They need to have two monsters the next day, so that's a huge problem. So I think trying to minimize caffeine. I think when home life is going well and when I have checked in, like engaged there, my mind isn't racing or that anxiety isn't going at work, you tend to fall asleep faster. So it's kind of a lot of those things that we can control, trying to do those better.
Jamie, our counselor, adds an interesting component to that, of just talking about the potentially negative thoughts around sleep that we might have, and how even counseling can help that stuff. So for people that are really struggling with it, that cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, she talks about these negative sleep thoughts that can come in. And you're right, that book, the initial bit is like, oh, this could give you cancer, it could give you Alzheimer's, it can da 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 da. You know, there's a laundry list of like, wow, this is really bad for you. And he's trying to hook you in to say, prioritize this, you know, in your life. When you get off work, if you can't control how many calls you run, you got to spend some time with the family. Also, hopefully, there's a time throughout the day you can take a nap, and he could help you dial that in. And also, don't binge watch Netflix until 2 o'clock in the morning, the night after you get off shift. Just prioritize. This is good for me.
Yep.
I know at this point in my life, I am going to be awake some. That is part of the thing.
I've had calls where they have been in the middle of the night, and you know, got to see them later at the hospital when they're doing well, or, you know, we actually made a difference. And I think holding on to those, like, that'll help you get through, might help you get through some of the calls that might not be such high acuity, you know?
Sure. And that may be part of the modern fire service. I think the fire service has always, people gravitate to it who have decided that challenges bring something. Maybe bring strength, build character, one of those things. This is not an easy job. Some of the calls now aren't those high acuity, but maybe there is this, we are growing in character, we are growing in strength, getting through hard times, that sort of thing. Do you think about that for the calls or for experiences you've had personally, just that growth that can potentially happen from challenge?
I'm even to another level of like station life. The growth that can happen there, you know, doing this job. I was like, even on a millennial level, I was a subpar millennial, at like just knowing how to do life in a lot of ways, you know. I mean, I was a terrible cook when I started out. Everything from that to, like the, like you're talking about, the patience, the communication skills, and just everything. If you allow yourself to be shaped by people who do the job well and by the calls, it can be a real refining type of process in the job. Or you can just get more and more disgruntled and angry. You kind of tend to go one of two ways, either be refined or be burned out, you know? And it's pretty hard to do this job long term.
Have you had moments that you felt were like lows in your career or life where you just weren't the person you wanted to be at that moment, or that you were really struggling with that and needed to recalibrate? Or do you feel like it's just been minor adjustments?
I feel like especially starting out the first few years, it was really, I won't say when I started public school sort of feeling, but just, you know, it's overwhelming. I remember that feeling coming online, the knowing how to cook stuff. You know, you're learning all these skills besides just how to fight fires.
Sure.
Which was, and there's guys who, they know a lot more than I do coming on. I think you kind of find your groove where you can, it's important for guys like find their groove, where can I add value and be an asset. Maybe it's not here, but maybe it's over there. So I think that was kind of a little roller coaster for me coming on. Man, I feel terrible about myself. I feel like such a liability. Oh, okay. Well, here's where I can add value. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to train. I'm going to put on trainings and mess it up. You know, the floater life, you know, I think was hard on the job. Like you're not really connected to a captain or to a crew. You need to kind of have an inner plan of an inner level of excellence that you, are going to strive to do, and no matter where you go. And I think that was an important time for me too, but had some discouraging moments too, or just lonely, you know. Haley had some health issues come up, and I think that affected me at work too. Didn't feel like, I wasn't like, hey guys, let's train on, you know, throwing ladders. I was just like, let's just get through the shift and not exactly bringing my passion to work, you know.
Right. But just thrown off a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember that feeling, and I remember my buddy Keith asking me, something's wrong today. And I really appreciated that. I think it's important for us to like be looking for that, and people like just calling that out, like, hey, something's off, what's going on, you know? Because none of us are going to open up necessarily and come forward a lot of times. We're just going to get through the shift and kind of bear down. But
I think that can give you a lot of grace and understanding for other folks, that we're not always all going to be at a 10 every single day. And that's okay. What you were saying reminded me of my first year of ski patrolling too. It was this really tight-knit group. I was the only new person that year. You know, similar job where they needed to trust each other. They're going out on these bombing missions and stuff like that to control avalanches. They're like a small family type organization. I just didn't necessarily feel part of it. There was also this, I believe, this kind of testing period that I had to go through, for lack of a better word. You know, they wanted to make sure I was in it for the right reasons and that I was gonna be able to do the job at a high level. And I feel like I really didn't connect, and I really felt like that was a challenge for the first year. But after that, growing closer to those folks and getting through that period, it did feel like that to me too.
Yeah, I think coming out on the other side of that, I get it. I get that process. It's hard, you know, now being here 6 years, new guys coming on, and you kind of want them to mess up a little bit and figure it out, because that's really the only way to get to point B for them. You got to run the calls. It's hard for me to like explain it to them.
Sure.
It's like, you just got to see it. You got to do it. But yeah, it's hard getting over that it's hard being an outsider.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to, I think, share this from you, somebody who is well into their career at this point, and to know maybe we don't have to do that either and make people feel so alienated, like they're sticking out like a sore thumb. They already feel like that. We don't need to contribute to that at all, potentially. And we do want them to be a productive member. They've already gone through 20 weeks at the Fire Academy. Believe me, it's not easy. They come out, they do need connection. And a lot of them, they may have other things going on. We've had some people with some tremendous stories that are still able to finish the Fire Academy and go online. They need that crew, and they need to be a functional part of the team. Any other projects or areas of focus you have in the job that are inspiring you right now?
You know, we did hazmat.
Yeah.
Tech school last year together. And yep. I think that I've really enjoyed that. Like, nice. that was a fun class. I never thought of myself as a science person when I was younger, but man, it's been fun to, you know, at the station level, we've been pulling up hazmat calls that are happening around the country and just talking through what we would do. It's kind of opened up a new side of the fire world to me.
Nice.
It's been really fun.
Very cool. You're learning from people that have such passion in those areas. You can get around somebody who's just like, that is their jam, and they're really good at it. It's so fun to soak that up, expand your mind, and just, you know, capture some of their passion is a cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I remember a journalism class I did have a long, long time ago. A journalist came in as a guest speaker, and somebody asked him, like, how do you get better, or how can you prepare for a job in that field? And they were just like, learn about everything, you know, it's good to have a little bit of knowledge in everything. We go into so many different, such a large variety of environments and call types that I love learning. And, it's fun when they're like really passionate, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have goals in the next 5-10 years, or today, tomorrow? What's your time frame?
Right. I think right now, I really want to basically see like spiritual needs and mental health needs met at the department. It's kind of a nebulous goal, but that's I think as far as like priorities go, that's a big purpose of why I show up every day, besides just enjoying the job. You know, as far as a bigger scope professionally for me, I'm going through this mentorship right now. I'd like to upgrade for a while. I enjoy the medicine too. Right now I'm a safety and medical officer upgrade. So I'm going to be able to kind of upgrade into both of those roles. And I enjoy doing that because I feel like I can come back to my level as a firefighter and paramedic and be better, having had more reps on critical calls. So I'm really looking forward to that stage, just hopefully coming back to my station, upgrading when I can, and giving back, continue to FTO.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
Nice. Well, we're lucky to have you doing it, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Let's close out with our final five. Tell me about a mentor that you've had, maybe that you haven't mentioned.
It'd be hard for me to talk about this job and not talk about Basil. He's very quiet, and you ask him how his 4-day was, he says, good, you. And that's all you're gonna get. A lot, very mysterious man. But my friend Keith and I were lucky enough to work with Basil a lot when we first started out. Basil is just kind of a machine. It was the reason that I really got excited about being a paramedic, was among other people. I mean, on Black Crew, I felt like an all-star cast of paramedics. It was awesome working with you guys. And getting to work down at Station 1 with Basil, it was... I could just watch him and kind of watch his daily routine. Mm-hmm. And it was just something I could fall into. Mm-hmm. And be like, man, he operates at a high level. I'm just going to do that. You know, sure, like yeah. I'm going to try that. And basically I just kind of tried to copy what he was doing and keep up, you know, and that's kind of still what I do. Basil, he doesn't talk about what he's going to do. He just does it.
Yeah.
You know, he's quiet, but really good at talking with patients, you know? And on the fireside, same thing. Just it's something that's cool about Basil that I really appreciate is he, even though he's been doing the job a long time, just the other day I walked out in the bay and he was out there by himself at Station 2. We don't have any high rises in Station 2. We don't have any cliffs in Station 2's area. But Basil was out there setting up a little rescue system off the back That's of the cool. engine, just practicing, making sure he knew how to do it.
Sure.
And he's been doing it, you know, 16, 17 years now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think just like, I love that approach to the job. Just yeah. like sort of that, you know, Kobe Bryant talked about it too, that Mamba mentality, but just like doing the simple things, not getting tired of doing the simple things
yeah.
well.
Yeah, yeah.
And Basil does that every day.
Well, I appreciate that you brought up Basil, and it was kind of one of the my thoughts in developing this, because people have said to me before, I wish we could clone that guy or knew what makes him tick to
yeah.
stay at Station 2 year in, year out. Most of us run away screaming after a year or two, you know.
Yeah.
It's challenging to balance that, to yeah. balance life, and to see somebody do it really well and to be the paramedic, you know.
Yeah.
He's FTO'd probably Everybody. The majority of this department mm-hmm. at this point, you know, which is a really cool thing to keep giving back. So sorry, Basil, for mentioning you on
yeah.
the podcast. I wish you'd come on and tell us
how
you do it.
This would be like the opposite of anything he would ever love to do. Yeah. Spare his soul and his life for a public audience.
But just humbly does the job.
He does, yeah.
You know, day in, day out. And super, super good one. A book. You mentioned a couple already, but...
I really enjoy reading John Krakauer books. Mm-hmm. He wrote Into the Wild, Into Thin Air. I love like adventure stories mm-hmm. like that. When I was doing journalism, what I really liked
sure.
was like those features type of stories with mm-hmm. where you have characters that are like not perfect and mm-hmm. messy and not glossed over. Mm-hmm. And he does such a good job of telling those stories. Into the Wild, Into Thin Air, Under the Banner of Heaven. He does a lot of good like character studies.
Podcasts, other than the parenting one you already mentioned. You said you listened to
it. Yeah, this is like, people laugh at this, but I listen to the Dave Ramsey Show a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, I like personal finance quite a bit, so uh-huh. kind of nerd out over that. I listen to Revisionist History quite a bit. It's a Malcolm Gladwell podcast, but yeah, he's a journalist too, and he's just kind of all over the map, but those are two that I go to quite a bit. Nice.
I know the physical component's a big one for you. What's a fun way to work out or get physical activity?
This year I picked up mountain biking, which has been super fun. My brother has a gravel bike, so he always wants to do these long like cross-country rides, so joining him on that has been fun. But it's been really cool like incorporating the kids, hike up the monument or something like that near our house. So I think just like I enjoy the gym stuff and sort of that CrossFit style, but I think getting outside is important yeah. too. You can't not do that in Western Colorado.
Last one, I'm going to change up a little bit for you since we talked about it a lot already. How can prayer be useful?
How I understand, like reading the Bible and learning about God, like he doesn't just want to hear like a polished, like prepared speech of a prayer. You read about like David and in the Psalms, a lot of the prayers in the Bible are laments, almost like angry prayers. Mm. I think kind of flipping that a little bit in our minds and just maybe looking at prayer as more of a conversation and less of like a prepared statement to God. So I think to people who are new to prayer or wanting to learn how to pray, just look at like, how would you talk to like the most loving dad that, you know, somebody who's just there, wants to be with you, wants to talk with you. I think about my son. I remember one morning specifically, I was out reading before he got up and he came and just like sat by me. He just wanted to be with me. He didn't have a book. He didn't turn the TV on. He just wanted to like be next to me. I think that that's how you see prayer in the Bible, and how when I really love prayer is like just being with God. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes that's like shouting and confused, and sometimes it's full of love and adoration. And I think that, but it's better to have that running conversation than just to pick and choose the moments you feel good about yourself to mm-hmm. come to him. I think prayer is more of like an open dialogue than that, you know? So that's not a great straight definition, but I think that's how I see it.
Matt, I truly want to thank you for coming in and sharing your experience, your passion for the people on the department, for the job, for your family, every component of it. It's so cool to hear, you know, so refreshing. And I think a lot of people are going to get a lot out of hearing you talk and even discuss openly, you know, these are some of the challenges that I've had to try to work against. We're all doing the, you know, what we can, and yeah. I'm going to keep working on these things.
Well, I appreciate you and everybody. Yeah. You know, so many good people on our department. It's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you don't want to hear how Matt's going to close this one out in prayer, feel free to fast forward. But if you would do me the honor. Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's all pray. Right. Lord God, we thank you so much for this day. Thank you that you're in control, that you're good, Lord, that you love us. Thank you so much for the opportunity to do a job that matters, where we can impact people's lives in a practical way and show them love, and where we can work together as a team and just work in a beautiful place like Colorado. You've really blessed us. Show us ways to give back, bring along opportunities for us to do that, and for us to be a blessing to our patients, to each other, and to this community. We just pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for joining us on Going Interior. I hope the ideas shared here help you to adapt to the challenges of your life and career. Please share and like this episode if you find it useful. It's been produced by Dirk Klingman and Ellis Thompson of the Grand Junction Fire Department. With special thanks to 970 West Studio for sharing their space, equipment, and expertise. Take care, and please join us again next week.